You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Also, another major breach of 2021 was Excellion. This is a firewall vendor, and they released a patch in late December of 2020 with more fixes in January, but these didn't get installed quickly enough, so some massive corporations actually had to declare data breaches. This was by the ransomware game Clop, but we're talking about organizations or victims that were the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, their entire Reserve Bank, the state of Washington, the Australian Securities and Investment Commission, their SEC, a cybersecurity firm known as Qualys, Singtel out of Singapore, basically a high-profile law firm, Jones Day, grocery store chain Kroger, which is huge here in the United States, also the University of Colorado, and on and on. So that was one of the massive, massive breaches that we saw. And finally, we've got a couple finalies for you here. We have to talk about essentially the NSO group. That was another major breach. It basically, they're an Israeli spyware developer. They're known as the NSO group, and they basically created a vulnerability or found a vulnerability and leveraged it called Pegasus that allowed a lot of authoritarian governments to simply install this into Apple iPhones with what's known as a zero-click infection, meaning they just sent it to the phone via text message, for example. You didn't have to tap it or even look at it, and it would activate and give anybody who was sending this full access to the phone. They could see everything that you were doing, and they hit heads of state, they hit Nobel Prize winners, they hit journalists. Everybody was essentially affected by this. Activists, political dissidents, all this kind of stuff. It was a huge, huge problem there. And so basically, a leaked list of 50,000 phone numbers associated with this Pegasus hit had activists, journalists, executives, politicians, all these kinds of things. It was a huge mess. NSO Group is now out of business. Israel was so shocked by this that they actually narrowed their export control list down for cyber weaponry to only allow Israeli companies to sell to democracies and allies of Israel, because other countries like the United Arab Emirates were buying this and then using it essentially to spy on populations or specific targets. No more. So we're going to see what happens with that, but that was a huge one. And the last breach we want to talk about here is Colonial Pipeline. We're going to give first, before that though, we'll give an honorary mention to Kaseya. This is a tool used by IT companies that got hit, and then basically their clients got hit. So it was a massive supply chain hack. 2,000 plus companies were instantly hit with ransomware. Companies went out of business. It was a huge, huge problem. So Kaseya definitely gets an honorable mention, but the most visible of 2021 was Colonial Pipeline, hands down. Pumps in the eastern United States basically screeched to a halt after a ransomware attack on this major fuel provider disrupted the supply chain. Colonial Pipeline carries 45% of the entire petroleum supply for the eastern seaboard of the United States. So this was a huge problem. This affected gas, diesel, jet fuel, all of these kinds of things. It was a huge problem. But here's the thing. The pipeline itself wasn't actually hit. The DarkSide ransomware gang actually got in through an insecure VPN connection to the office of Colonial Pipeline and hit the billing system. They got into the billing department and they shut the billing department down. Colonial Pipeline had no idea how they were actually going to charge their distributors, because they didn't know how much gas was basically being sent to the distributors through the pipeline. So instead of making the choice of figuring out how to bill later with their insurance company, because they are insured for these kinds of things, they just decided to shut the pipeline down. And that caused a national panic as soon as the media got wind of this, because everybody thought, oh my God, this is going to be a massive hit. We're not going to have gas for weeks as they're unscrewing themselves. And here we are, fistfights at the pump. It was utter chaos, all that kind of stuff. And if you're on the East Coast, listen to me on one of those stations or eventually on SoundCloud, you know what I'm talking about. And here's the thing. We had so much gas at all these gas stations that if the media had never gotten wind of it, we never would have seen a riot. It would have been business as usual. There would have been no problems. There would have been no shortages, because Colonial Pipeline was able to bring everything back online a couple days later, and keep operations moving. So obviously a huge, huge thing. And finally, we want to talk about 2022 because I've got some cybersecurity predictions for all y'all. And I think some of these are obvious, but some of these I think are going to impact everybody out there that is listening to this. And so we want to talk about the 2022 and where cybersecurity is heading. And so the first point I'm going to talk about, and I have 8 points here, is that ransomware isn't going anywhere. It's obvious. It continues to proliferate. It continues to be lucrative. It continues to be a problem. We're coming off one of the busy seasons in ransomware, which is the 2 weeks before, during, and after Christmas and New Year. And so essentially when nobody's watching the barn, ransomware gangs tend to go to work. Those are their busy hours. And here we are. Ransomware isn't going anywhere. It's going to continue to explode. I will continue to be talking about that here on the radio. Point number two, prediction number two, cryptocurrency theft will continue to rise. As cryptocurrency becomes more popular, it's more widely platformed and accepted by multiple platforms, we are starting to see that theft, and we're going to start seeing that continue to go up and up and up. Remember, there is no such thing as like an FDIC insurance. If your bank gets ripped off and your cryptocurrency is stolen, sucks to be you. Nothing you can do. So that is going to continue to rise as well, especially as cryptocurrency becomes more lucrative. Prediction number three, organizations will still be overwhelmingly reactive. And it's, I have to say, though, it's been nice to see over the last 3 to 5 years or so that we are getting more proactive calls. Basically, like, yeah, a friend of mine's company just got hit with ransomware. I don't want to be that guy. Or, you know, just, hey, I want to make sure that I am doing what I need to do. I'm starting to get concerned about this. But overwhelmingly, the calls continue to come in of basically, I've never worked with you. Oh my God, we're hit, we're down. Now I'll spend any amount of money to get myself back online and keep working, et cetera, et cetera. And so we are going to continue to see organizations simply react to these things as they get hit. And I think that's the bad way to be, because a little bit of proactivity goes a really long way, but most organizations worldwide will continue to be overwhelmingly reactive, not proactive to cyber threat. Prediction number four, major ransomware players are actually going to go dormant for 2022. And here's why. One, they made an absolute ton of money in 2021, so they can take the year off without any kinds of problems whatsoever. But there has been an extra level of scrutiny since the Biden administration came in and really started pushing for cybersecurity control. And also the international community is starting to essentially raise, follow that lead and raise that kind of awareness and scrutiny. And so there's a lot of law enforcement and intelligence agencies that are actively looking for these threat actors. And so by virtue of that, going dormant or pulling an exit scam and disappearing with all of your cash probably is going to happen quite a bit, because you want to basically lay low till the heat's off and then spin up in a year or two. Because, you know, if you're sitting on tens of millions of dollars, there's no reason why you can't sit on a beach with it somewhere for a year, enjoy life, and then just go back to making more the old fashioned horrible way. So we're going to see some major ransomware players or gangs go dormant in 2022. I think that's going to happen. That's my prediction. Prediction number five, cyber threats in outer space will be more of a concern. We recently saw a near collision between a SpaceX, I think it was a satellite, and a Chinese space station. But as we continue to use low orbit satellite from Elon Musk, his Starlink, as well as other platforms out there, we are going to start to see more cyber threat in space. Imagine, you know, hacking the space station and doing something in active space war, like shutting off the air or firing the thrusters, or I don't know, whatever you can do in outer space. We are going to start to see news reports of hacking happening in things that are in orbit here in the United States. And at some point, somebody will probably hack the Mars rover or whatever, and we'll see that happen too. But threats in space are going to be much more of a concern. And I think we're going to see governments start to address that as news stories come out in 2022. Prediction number six, mobile phone zero-day threats will increase, and Apple is still going to lag behind. Now, the largest rising threat vector for years has been mobile platforms. As we continue to go mobile and we adopt Android or iPhone or whatever we're using, essentially, we are seeing more and more threat come out there. But as we are seeing with things like Pegasus, these zero-day threats, meaning, we have to figure out how to defend as fast as we humanly can because there's no defense for it right now. We're going to continue to see those things proliferate through the app stores of Apple, as also with Google Play, which is their app store, and also infected websites that, instead of targeting Windows computers, will start targeting those operating systems with infections. The problem, though, is that Apple is incredibly behind on these things. I've talked about this on the air here. I've talked about this in my daily videos and podcasts as well. But essentially what's happening with Apple is they are very slow to pay for bug bounties, meaning the researchers that are finding these vulnerabilities, it's not as lucrative to work with Apple. Apple also has a closed ecosystem, so they're not letting third-party threat intelligence that is quite frankly doing threat intelligence better than they are into their app stores. You're essentially given what Apple is giving, or you're taking what Apple is giving you, and that's the only thing they're doing, is basically moving this internally. And this is where we see big problems with like the NSO's group Pegasus that I just talked about, whereas Android, their app store is a lot more Wild West, meaning it is more susceptible to things like infections. It gives you every tool in the arsenal. Google is not lagging behind in that sense. So we're going to see Apple still lag behind, and your mobile phone is going to be more of a threat. You've got to make sure that what you're downloading is legitimate. The sites you're going to are legitimate. If you're an Apple user, you don't have every tool in the arsenal. Android people, you're actually better off. Moving on, prediction number 7. Deep fake weaponization for disinformation campaigns will continue to rise. We are honing deepfake to the point where even the system set up to basically detect deepfake is essentially having a problem with this. Deepfakes are getting so good. And I can imagine a world, especially since this is an election year for the United States, even though it's midterm, I could see deepfake audio and video basically go out there and spread like wildfire. We've recently seen this politically in the last couple of years with a video of Nancy Pelosi giving a speech, but the video was altered to make her look slow and slurred and drunk. And she wasn't. If you actually watch the regular speech, she was there and alert and obviously sober. But we're going to continue to see these kinds of things rise because that's obviously what they're going to do. So I would imagine that, we can see a deepfake video, for example, of President Biden saying something that he clearly did not say. That goes viral. It basically then has a confirmation bias status with, those that deeply, deeply oppose the current president. And that's going to spread like wildfire. And eventually the news will come out 24 hours to 72 hours later to say, yeah, no, that's not Biden. He never said that. But the damage is already done. Millions of people are going to believe that. They're not going to see those retractions, or they're not going to see those news stories. And there you go. Deep fake weaponization is going to be a very serious problem, especially here in the United States as we go through congressional and senatorial campaigns. And finally, my last prediction number 8 for 2022, is that cybersecurity professionals we'll basically see increased personal attacks. And that obviously is a huge problem, especially for myself. I don't want to see this. But if you didn't know, we are phished constantly. There is a constant barrage, whether it's on social media platforms like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, etc., of people attempting to connect to us, direct message us, send us stuff, oh yes, check out my white paper on my cybersecurity, whatever, it's an infected PDF. We have a huge problem with this. And I tend to be more public on the more public side of cybersecurity. And so by virtue of that, if you Google my name, you will pull up legitimate sites like my TED Talks, this radio show, some of the work that I do on boards, all that kind of stuff. But if you go down a little further, you will see websites purporting to have my work that are actually phishing sites. They're infected sites. You've got to be careful with these things, making sure you're going to legitimate sites like SoundCloud or YouTube, where I both have accounts. You can see them, or Twitter, where I have an actual account, as opposed to going to some random string.ru that just happens to have my name on it, because they're reproducing the 5 laws of cybersecurity, but it's not actually legitimate. So make sure that you are keeping out an eye out for those kinds of things, because that is essentially going to affect cybersecurity personnel. I have a very big tinfoil hat because of this. We've also seen phishing campaigns from state-sponsored government attackers trying to lure and infect cybersecurity professionals at other companies by offering them lucrative jobs. We saw a North Korean attempt at this towards South Korean cybersecurity professionals, and that was a complete and utter mess as they started infecting cybersecurity professionals at some of the largest South Korean corporations. So we have to keep a heads up for this. This is a new tactic we're going to see. And so people like me are basically going to be targeted left and right, and I already am. So I'm just waiting for it to ramp up. So those are my 8 cybersecurity predictions for 2022. This segment obviously went long, but a lot of good information here. And I think 2022 is going to be a great year, hopefully better than 2021. Although we literally just lost Betty White and at the end of 2021. So 2022 is automatically better because Betty White was pretty dang cool. So those are your breaches of the week, your breaches of the year, and your cybersecurity predictions for 2022.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is entitled "Cyber Attacks Are Now Core Strategy for Military Invasions." And this is not as obvious as you would think. And I'm sure that, when I talked about this previous to this, there are a lot of people like, well, yeah, duh, Nick. But no, this actually goes a little deeper than you think. And there's a lot more that goes on with an actual cyber attack in terms of military invasions. This is actually an important thing to talk about because we have to start with the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Essentially, this has led to border tension, but United States and British intelligence think that coordinated cyber attacks are a much more likely opening move than a physical incursion. The New York Times reported that the United States and UK have dispatched cyber warfare advisors to the Ukraine to prepare for potential attacks. The prospect is not unprecedented, as Russia disabled Ukrainian power stations the last time tensions between the two countries escalated. I actually wrote extensively about that for a previous publisher of mine, and essentially it was thought that this was a dry run by Russia, essentially to see what their capability would be to make the country deaf and blind. So they hit a power station, or rather a power plant, knocking it out, which essentially turned the entire countryside for about 85,000 people dark. And then they also hit the communication system, so nobody could actually call into the power company to complain about anything was out. They effectively made a small region in Ukraine deaf and blind, and that's what we're talking about. And they did that a while back. Russian hackers previously turned, like I mentioned, the lights off in the Ukraine in both 2015 and 16 as part of the long-running conflict between those two nations. And while Russia has moved around 175,000 troops to the Ukraine border in recent escalation, the most likely opening would be a wave of cyber attacks, similar to what I just talked about, but also different, and we'll get to that too. Now, American intelligence agencies believe that the strategy is more than just simple harassment. Outages of essential services such as utilities and banking could be used by Russia to delegitimize the Ukraine government and potentially provide a cover story for an invasion. Essentially, what they're talking about here is Russia decides to knock out the bank, delegitimize the government, if you will, because the government can't handle everything, and then essentially say, hey, yeah, no, we'll come in and we'll place in a pro-government solution there. The current conflict is tied to the formation of a separatist group that wants to see Ukraine abandon its Western allies like the United States or not join NATO and align itself with Russia's political interests. And there have been interesting articles and studies done on this about how Putin, basically Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, wants to essentially recreate the Soviet Union under his leadership without actually calling it the Soviet Union. Now, while Russia has consistently engaged in some amount of cyber attacks against Ukraine in recent years, American officials say that the efforts have ramped up since the beginning of December with an active campaign against assorted Ukraine government agencies along with their electrical grid. U.S. officials remain unsure if Russia really intends to engage in a quote-unquote hot war invasion of Ukraine. Putin's strategy may be limited to cyber attacks with the intention of paralyzing the country's infrastructure, creating conditions in which to install a Russian-friendly government. Russia faces global sanctions at minimum if it were to physically cross the border and invade, which also risks the possibility of an armed response by the United States and other Ukraine allies. The cyber attack avenue is also much easier for Russia due to the country's sharing of the electrical grid that was developed while both were members of the Soviet Union. Russia has extensive knowledge of the Ukraine system, given that most of it still makes use of parts and elements that Russia developed. Interestingly enough, the nuclear reactor that melted down in Chernobyl in Ukraine is essentially a reactor that is still used by former Eastern Soviet bloc countries and Russia as well. And so by virtue of that, this intimate knowledge, this development that Russia has in the Ukraine gives them a potential advantage because they know how to disrupt that. And if you're thinking, oh my God, the same reactor that Chernobyl had, the one that blew up and contaminated like a zillion things, yes, that's still in play. In fact, there's something like 15 to 20 of these reactors scattered across Eastern Europe that are still in use. They were very inexpensive to make. Obviously, that led to problems, and they've continued to attempt to hone those and shore those up as they continue to keep those things online. But those are running power for a lot of people in Eastern Europe. That should make everybody just a little bit on edge. Now, a 2015 cyber attack on Ukraine, which turned the power off to numerous neighborhoods, came during Christmas when the utility companies had skeleton crews on duty. And that's essentially what we see. When it's around Christmas time, cybersecurity professionals are always getting calls from new clients that are getting hit because nobody's watching the barn. Everybody's off for Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate. And here we are. This is no different. Now, American officials, though, believe that if a similar attack is actually going to come, it's actually going to come in early January, right now as I'm sitting here talking to you, after the popular Orthodox Christmas, which is regionally popular in the Ukraine. So there you go. That's obviously a huge thing. Orthodox Christmas, when that rolls around, again, skeleton crews in Ukraine, boom, here we are. Now, the plus side is that if Ukraine is being advised on these things, they can start fully staffing. They can watch the barn during Orthodox Christmas in a way that they probably didn't during the 2015 outage and cyber attack there. Now, there are some possibilities for cooling down the Russia-Ukraine conflict, but those possibilities are rather limited. Putin's overall goal with the digital incursions into Ukraine is to get a friendly government installed, ideally a puppet that can be directly controlled by Moscow. But a central goal is also to push Ukraine away from joining NATO, something I just talked about, something the country has declared an intention to do. President Zelensky there has been on board with that. And President Putin does not necessarily want to control all of Ukraine. He may simply be satisfied by occupying the eastern portion of it to create a buffer zone between Russia and Europe. That's essentially what happened a few years back when Russian cutouts invaded there, claiming sovereignty, claiming protection of Ukraine when they hit the Crimea region. Now, for its part, NATO members want to see Russia withdraw from Crimea and reestablish diplomatic ties. It also wants to see cyber attacks against its neighbors cease, with British intelligence officials describing Ukraine as, quote, Russia's cyber playground for the past decade. The U.S. has established talks with Russia, including a couple of direct phone conversations on the matter between Presidents Putin and Biden, but these efforts really haven't seemed to bear fruit just yet. We'll see what goes on there. Now, Russia's hacking teams were also handed something of a Christmas gift recently with the reveal of the Log4j vulnerability. That's something I talked about on my last radio show. This is basically a vulnerability that potentially exposes roughly 3 billion devices around the world to relatively simple attacks that can lead to a total compromise of a system. For example, China and Iran's state-backed threat actors have already been observed experimenting with the vulnerability in the wild, and it's likely that Russia will join in, given how common Log4j, this Java tool, is in software packages. The publisher of this, Apache, has made a patch for this available, but everybody's got to update it. It can't update itself. And so it's going to be a very time-consuming process, meaning as we are continuing to update and patch, and there was a massive rush by IT and cybersecurity professionals to do that, there are still billions of devices out there where the people are simply just not aware, or they're cheap IoT devices that are integrated to this, and those manufacturers will never get around to it, or they will next year, leaving that device potentially compromisable on your network. It was a huge, huge mess. That's why I talked about it in the last one. Now, back to this. If Putin's goal is domination of Ukraine, there can be little compromise on that issue. The only thing that has stayed Russia's hand in the past and made it fall back is the threat of repercussions, something both the United States and Europe, specifically the European Union, are in less of a position to deliver than usual. In lieu of direct military participation, something that basically the United States has little appetite for, given everything we've been through in the last 20 years, not to mention the Taliban withdrawal, which was a disaster, the Biden administration has the option of simply supplying Ukraine with arms to increase the toll of the basically the toll on Russia if they were to invade. But that would basically do nothing to stem cyber attacks, which Russia can always cover with some layer of plausible deniability. And that's exactly why they are so effective. You would think in warfare, basically, and this is warfare 101, you make the enemy deaf and blind. And after they are deaf and blind, you can invade and you're much more effective.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.